It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your host, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
Let's Talk Legal with Harvell & Collins, attorneys at law, the right advice at the right time. And joining us are Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Ben. Good
morning.
All right, what are we talking about today?
Ben, I think we're going to talk this week as well as next week about statutes of limitations and kind of not only tell our listeners what they happen to be, but let's also describe and explain, if you will, this week, and again, we will do it again next week, the purpose behind these kinds of statutes.
Mm-hmm.
And they are, in fact, that just that. They are statutes.
Right.
And these various statutes in any number of places within the North Carolina general statutes, which, of course, is the law of the state of North Carolina, dictate the time period in which we must bring an action or bring our cause forward. And we will talk about what these limitations are. We will talk about the exceptions, what might stop, or sometimes the word is used, toll a statute of limitation.
Mm-hmm.
What is the triggering event? For instance, just real quickly, you know, how can you bring an action if you don't know you have an action?
Right.
We'll
right.
see how knowledge of your action is, you know, works into the various statutes.
What starts the clock
what
and what
stops
it.
What starts the clock, exactly.
Right.
Now, the general philosophy here, if you will, Ben, is that, you know, we want folks, the law encourages folks to bring their actions. They have documents, they have witnesses, they have information that is readily available. And as this information ages, as witnesses' memories fade, as witnesses, if you will, begin to die, the bottom line is that that information is not as reliable as a general rule. And therefore, our law supports folks bringing their action within a certain time frame. Otherwise, the information is not necessarily reliable. Also, there is a public policy argument that, you know, I mean, how else to say it? Let's let dead dogs lie.
Right.
I mean,
right.
you know, we don't need to reinvent something that happened 20 years ago. So the law is going to encourage that we bring our cause of action, that we have our day in court within a certain amount of time.
Yes. All right. Again, this, and there are so many of them.
There are.
Wes, it'd be nice if they're all the same, but they're not. I mean,
no,
for various things, they quite a bit of difference.
No, they're not at all. And, you know, we deal with the contract statute limitations, estate-related statute limitations, negligence-related, tort-related statute limitations, day in and day out, all the time. So we kind of have those down. But, you know, sometimes you deal with cases that fall in the nook or the cranny.
Right.
And there's a particular statute of limitations that may actually lengthen the period of time for which you may bring your action. More often than not, situations where it shortens the particular period of time.
And these aren't suggestions. These are statutes. So, I mean, you can definitely be out of luck if you don't pay attention.
They are hard and fast rules.
Yeah.
You know, when we're talking about a statute of limitations or statute of repose, this is not, you know, kind of a gray area where, oh, we'll take it to the jury and see what they say. No, if the facts are that too much time has passed, then, you know, a good attorney is not going to even bring the action.
Right.
You know, that's just going to be, as they say, Katie bar the door. We're done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so what I brought here today so that we can deal with some of the nooks and crannies is the Statute of Limitations Index. It's a risk management handout that's prepared by Lawyers Mutual, which obviously is just a handy-dandy guide here in about 20 pages of some particular statutes of limitations. You know, Lawyers Mutual puts that out for its members and for attorneys in general, just so that, you know, they don't want their insured, their attorneys, to miss statute limitations, because that's malpractice.
Right.
Yeah, so We're going to jump around a little bit because this is really put together in an alphabetical type order.
Yeah, but the world doesn't deal that way.
That's right. That's so. Right. But we'll start from the beginning and, okay. and move through and then go through each one. I think the first one that would be relevant is under a bond. You know, Cecil and I talk about estates a lot. You know, we really haven't gotten into bonds that much in all of our programs. But, you know, typically when you have an executor or an administrator or collector or guardian of an estate, then there's a requirement for a bond to be posted under the statute. And the purpose of that bond, this insurance product, which is what the bond is to protect against, you know, misuse, loss of value.
Right.
In the estate. Now, in most well-drafted wills, you're going to have a waiver of bond so that the executor that you appoint under your will does not have to go out and procure that bond, pay for the premiums, do all those type things. So in many cases, you're actually not going to have a bond to secure the activities of the personal representative. But in the event you do, and there is some breach of duty, then you have a statute of limitations of 6 years from when there's an auditing and filing of the audited account, meaning let's say we're dealing with an estate, you have to file an account. The account says one thing, but maybe there's breach in that account, or maybe the account is not accurate, and maybe you find out, you know, about that later even.
Right.
But still, you can't collect on the bond after 6 years from when that actual account was filed. So that kind of shortens the period of time that you otherwise would maybe have a claim against the executor.
Okay.
So that's a lot of words there to just talk about a bond. But in many cases, you know, if we're dealing with some breach of fiduciary duty by an executor, you know, one of the things we're looking at, was there a bond in place?
Right.
And because if they breach their duty and a lot of time has gone by, there might not be anything to collect.
Right.
But if we have a bond in place, then we just file an action on the bond. We still have to prove our case, but we would be able to potentially collect from the insurance product.
Would it also be a violation if there was no waiver of the bond, then who instigates that bond to be placed?
The clerk of court, that's right.
In a will, as Wes was saying, most wills that we see, a last will and testament, drawn most likely by a lawyer, is going to have within its boilerplate, if you will, Ben, the waiver of the bond. This is just fairly fundamental. This is pretty fundamental. And we have a run on these, by the way, the first of the year. I don't know what it is. We have opened up quite a few estates, but all without a will for some reason. We have a run on folks with dying without a will.
Right.
And as we've discussed many times on the program, they then die intestate, and there is an administrator who is appointed. The administrator has the same duties. Exactly kind of the same kind of person as an executor, but the word just changes. Now, an administrator is not going to have a will. By definition, there is no will. And so there's no waiver of the bond. And therefore, in the administration of an estate, one of the requirements of law is that there be the posting of the bond. The only way around that is to have the rightful heirs of the estate, whoever they happen to be, and by the way, it has to be all of them, waive the bond.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Which sometimes we can accomplish, and other times we cannot, but it is certainly a hurdle. So that's where that applies. Now, in a guardianship proceeding where someone has been adjudicated incompetent, handicapped, been in a terrible accident, a person of dire mental illness, whatever the case might be, where they're unable to handle their property, their affairs, their bank accounts, their investments, there's a guardian appointed. And the guardian is going to have to now post a bond. And this, of course, cannot be waived. This is just a rule that the court requires that the guardian of property of another post a bond. And so, now as we know, Ben, we're framed up, are we not, for there to be these accountings.
Right.
Accountings right. are filed in an estate, whether it's through a will or whether it's through an intestate, or lack of will mm-hmm. estate. An accounting is required for a guardianship.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so the statute of limitations now comes forward and says that, look, once there's been an accounting filed,
mm-hmm.
okay,
right.
you folks out there who are interested in this have something to look at. You have something on behalf of the fiduciary, if you will, the person in charge. They filed an accounting. And if you think there has been a malfeasance here, there's mm-hmm. been a depletion of assets, then you now are going to have 6 years after the filing of that accounting to make a claim on the bond. We begin to see on this one, don't we, Wes, where, you know, this is a fairly long statute.
Right.
We're going to see a lot of them then, as I know you know, 1 year, mm-hmm. 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
There's one coming up here in a minute that's 120 days.
Mm.
Okay. 6 years is a right long time.
Right.
That kind of falls into the family of contract, doesn't it, Wes?
Yeah, there's no question about that. But, you know, the devil's in the details, and the way this statute reads is a 6 years after auditing and filing of the audited account.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So it's not 6 years from determining or learning of or, you know, having knowledge of
or
this.
Opening
breach.
The estate.
That's right.
That,
I mean, I have a case I'm dealing with currently where, you know, a grandchild who was probably 15 years old
mm-hmm.
At the time of the breach of fiduciary duty, you know, took place about mm-hmm. 10 years ago, has contacted me, and we have found that the executor here in Carteret County misused the money.
Mm-hmm.
And we were able to do that through bank records. You know, it's a six-figure loss to the estate, but it was more than 6 years ago. So we can't make a claim on the bond because the statutes run from when mm-hmm. that accounting actually got filed, even though this 25-year-old now, 15-year-old then, just learned about it.
Yeah, right.
Okay. Now we can bring a direct claim, you mm-hmm. know, against the personal representative, the executor, but, you know, there's no insurance policy
right.
there to pay
mm-hmm.
For this malfeasance.
So depending on the assets of the
right.
Direct claim.
6 years, pretty long period of time, but it is interesting that the way that's worded is it runs from whenever that account was filed. I think the philosophy is there, once it gets filed, it's public record. Anybody can come look at it. If
right.
there's an issue with it, go take a look at it now, and then let's work on it right away as opposed to waiting and letting it become stale.
All right. More to come in just a moment on Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, 800-818-2255, if you'd like to call in and ask a question. Hey, welcome back. Good to have you with us here on Let's Talk Legal, brought to you by Harvell and Collins Attorneys at Law. We're talking about statutes and limitations, and that was a somewhat complicated one, but one that I would imagine is important with every will and every estate.
Too. Right. So, you know, under that scenario during the break, you brought mm-hmm. up the question, you know, since this person was, let's say, 15
right.
At the time of the breach with the statute, as it relates to collecting on a bond run against this minor
mm-hmm.
at that point in time. And the facts in that particular case would be and are that actually the person who had the claim at that point in time was the parent.
Right.
Because the parent of this minor mm-hmm. should have received more from the inheritance of the grandparent who died.
Right.
Those are the facts in the case.
Right.
So that 6 year statute would have been running against the parent.
Mm-hmm.
And then when the parent died, that's when the claim potentially for the grandchild, mm-hmm. you know, would have vested and he would have been able to brought it. It's a convoluted set of facts in this particular case.
Yeah.
But we do have to take into consideration when you have a minor or, you know, someone who's incompetent, mm-hmm. incapacity, unable to, you know, obviously mm-hmm. protect your own rights, then does the statute run against mm-hmm. the person? In some particular situations, it may, like mm-hmm. If you're injured in an accident, you know, you can't wait until you're 18. You're going to bring the action, have
right.
a guardian appointed. in some situations, a statute will not run against a minor.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, again, you mentioned there are other statutes of limitations involved in estates, right? So
I guess
that's where you want to go.
Oh, yeah. Yes, there are.
I mean, like making a claim.
Quite a few.
But you're making me jump from the B's all the way to the E's on that.
All right. Well, you take it any way you want to.
Let's go to the C's.
Okay. All right.
So under construction, we deal with this all the time.
Right.
You know, in the event that we have someone who has done work on a project but mm-hmm. hasn't been paid, mm-hmm. this could be a surveyor. It could be an architect. It could be the general contractor. It could be a subcontractor. Well, in the event they haven't been paid, then they have a right to file a claim of lien against the property where they've done the work mm-hmm. within 120 days. So here we are in a very short statute of limitations where if you haven't been paid on this project, you file your notice of lien, and that's a cloud on title for the property. And the idea there, Ben, is that we want to cloud the title so that, let's say, a closing is coming up mm-hmm. at the end of construction to do your final financing. We want to make sure all of these lien claimants get paid for the work they've done.
Right.
The law doesn't support these individuals putting work into this project and then the owner just having the project mm-hmm. with no rights in the person who's provided the service or product
right.
relative to the project. So 120 days to file the claim of lien, but then that just goes away. Mm-hmm. That is extinguished in the event that a civil action, a lawsuit, is not brought within 180 days mm-hmm. to perfect that lien.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If you wait past 180 days, you still have the right to bring a claim for, let's say, breach of contract, because I did work, I had a contract,
right.
I wasn't paid, or maybe it could be a negligence claim. Could be unjust enrichment, could be multiple claims. But in order to keep your lien on that title,
mm-hmm.
you have to file your action to perfect your notice of lien, your claim of lien, within 180 days of the last day that you did any work on the job.
Okay. So the importance, though, of having the lien against the title is to cloud the title, right?
That's correct.
To make it so it's harder to
sell and
transfer.
Because you know, let's say that a subcontractor hasn't been paid, has in fact done the work. They file their claim of lien. They file their action within mm-hmm. 180 days. Their lien is still on title. Now, this hasn't gone to court yet.
Right.
We haven't had a lawsuit yet. We haven't had a jury or a judge make a decision on this yet. The facts have to be considered before this can be decided.
Mm-hmm.
But let's say that the owner has to get his construction loan converted into permanent financing.
Right. Right.
They have to go to closing. The closing attorney is not going to just close over the top of this lien.
Mm-hmm.
The closing attorney is, in order to get the new loan in place, the mm-hmm. permanent financing in place, is going to require that the amount sought by the lien claimant be posted with the clerk of court as security. So that depending on how that works,
right?
How the money is there.
Yeah, the money's there.
All right, then pay it out at the end.
We'll talk a little bit more about that too. Coming up in a moment about statutes of limitations here on the Talk Station, FM 107 and AM 1240. But Let's Talk Legal online at harvellandcollins.com. Hey, welcome back to Let's Talk Legal with Harvey Allen Collins, Attorneys at Law. We're talking about statutes of limitations. Where are we now?
Well, this is one of the easy ones. Contracts. A written document of contract. Now, mm-hmm. keep in mind, a contract doesn't have to be something drawn up by a lawyer necessarily.
Right.
I mean, a written contract
mm-hmm.
can be pretty fundamental.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it can be a sentence or two on a piece of paper. Okay,
right.
But it's a written contract. Okay.
We can also have verbal contracts.
We can, and that's expressed or implied, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, we've got
express
or implied. It could
Correct.
Be verbal. It could be,
as long as it's
not
real.
It could be written.
That's right.
Yeah.
Now, if it's a written contract, mm-hmm. then the statute of limitations is 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
4 years.
Okay.
Well, for the sale of goods, though.
Yep.
That's because under the UCC, we fall under the Uniform Commercial Code, General Statute 25. We deal with the sale of goods.
Right.
That's a 4-year statute of limitations. That's like you breach a contract for purchasing a car.
Right.
For purchasing a boat, for buying a anything, goods.
Right.
Goods. We kind of know people out there know what goods are.
Right.
Anything used in, commerce.
Stuff. Okay.
Right. Goods.
Right.
Every other contract's 3.
Mm-hmm.
That's what Cecil was leading to.
That's right.
Pretty simple.
Yeah. Okay. So you better have that index in front of you when you're going through these things.
Right. Yeah. So, you could have situations where we have a breach of contract for let's say there's a real estate contract. Mm-hmm. Let's say there's a so-and-so agreed to sell his property to me for $100,000.
Mm-hmm.
Signed, sealed, and delivered.
Yeah, those have to be written. Right?
Have to be written.
Yeah.
That's right. That's statute of frauds. Has to be in writing. So, but they failed to do so.
Mm-hmm.
I really want that property because I think it's really worth a lot more than $100,000.
Right.
So it's a good deal for me.
Mm-hmm.
Well, under that particular situation, you can't wait more than 3 years in order to bring your action. Now, you probably would not wait that long because you're involved in the contract.
Sure.
You know what's going on. Here it is right in front of us. We want to close it.
Mm-hmm.
You also would have a right to specific performance.
Right, and I thought that would come up.
Which is the difference between money and performance.
Mm-hmm.
Do we really want you to pay me some money here because of your breach, your failure to, or do I really want the property?
And
I'll give you $100,000.
Yeah.
I want the property. That's specific performance. The reason the law supports that is because each piece of real property is unique.
Mm-hmm.
It's not one just like another. So, money damages isn't going to resolve it.
Okay. All right. We'll have more next week on Let's Talk Legal. You can find out more, too, by calling them at 252-726-9050, 1107 Bridges Street in Morehead City, online at harvellandcollins.com.